time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Monday, April 22nd, 2024. For those of you who are into it, it's Earth Day. Anyway, so good to have you here. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals, and it is for mortgage professionals. And we're so glad to have you as our listener. Again, tens of thousands are listening to this every single day. It's just amazing. Again, it's because I believe it is our commitment to bring you timely information in an audio format you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Joining me on the podcast today will be Adam DeSantis of the MBA with his recorded segment, Les Parker with his recorded segment, Matt Graham with his recorded segment. But live is Alice Alvey, David Kittle, Alan Pollock, Bill Corbett, and Mark Helms. So good to have them all here. I just want to say thank you to our sponsors. So grateful to our sponsors, but starting off with Byte Software. If you're tired of all long contracts and failed implementations or having to change your process to fit your LOS, you may want to just consider Byte, because they have got so many happy clients because of how they handle it. And they're just so affordable. In this time when you want to cut costs, you got to check out Byte Software. Listen to the interview we did with Aaron D. of Loan People back in January. Also, Finastra. So excited about my partnership with Finastra. It's been going on for so many years. They're so great. I'm so grateful to them for their leadership in the industry. They're the number one fintech company in the world. We're paying attention to what they're saying. I'm bringing on a number of their guests coming up soon, shortly. I was just on a call just before we got on this call with Colin, who is going to be speaking out about some of the things going on. Now, Finastra is dominant in the savings and loan, the mutual savings banks, the SNLs and banks that are in that, as well as credit unions. So a lot of financial institutions, and we're seeing that advantage kind of slipping and going towards them. So Finastra has great technology that they're using for the banking solution. We're going to be having one of their top people from Europe come on and talk about artificial intelligence. That is another podcast. Will be great. Also, Lender Homepage. It's an all-in-one AI-powered platform that provides seamless front-end solutions to the mortgage business of all sizes. It doesn't matter what size you are. Got to check out Lender Homepage. They help you connect better with borrowers, convert that traffic to leads, and also close loans faster. Check out the interview we did with Rocky and Quay back in December of last year. It's good, and we're having them back on to talk about what they are offering and some of the new improvements to their system. Again, AI-powered. Got to pay attention to what's going on with AI, folks. It's taking over our lending industry. Also, Truve, unlock the power of a consumer permission data to verify income and employment for 90% of the U.S. workforce. It's powerful. The best part, it saves 80% of the cost to do so over the other leading competitor in the space. Try it. It reduces risk, fraud, verification of costs for an for your organization. It does it all through a seamless, optimized platform. Check out the interview we did with Richard Greiser on November 29th. Also, Angel AI. Man, if you're not checking out, going over to angelai.com, we're recording an interview this week with one of the top loan officers who's saying they don't work for SunWest, the independent person, and they're using this product for free. And it is, she said it has transformed the way she's doing business. So check out angelai.com. Also, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Mobility, MMI, Modix, and Knowledge Cube. Thank you for all of your sponsorship. We've got David Kittle here live with us at the TMC. So we'll get a TMC update in just a minute. But grateful for all of our sponsors. If you're interested in sponsorship, and we're getting a lot of interest, we would welcome you to call me or email me. We go to our website, you'll see the sponsorship page. Last Monday, we released an interesting episode with Greg Scher of NFM. Again, you're seeing a lot of his posts out there. A lot of feedback is coming in about what Greg is saying. He's willing to get out there and say things. I think he's a junior David Kittle. I think that's what my thought is. He's willing to get out there and say things that others are not. You got to pay attention to what Greg is saying. That's why I did the interview of him, because you're seeing him doing more and more commentary on the marketplace and what's going on out there. And he's willing to swim out into issues that are a little bit maybe controversial, but he speaks and he's trying to get it. So the reason he wants me to bring it up, the reason we interviewed him, is he says, please have your listeners, Dave, comment on my post. I want to hear where I'm. They think I'm wrong. Tell me why I'm wrong, because he wants to learn. You just find that guy so refreshing to talk to. This week on Wednesday, we'll be releasing the episode with Bob Simpson. This is a friend of David Kittle, and I got introduced to him from David. He has a company called Daylight AML. It is a topic that's very much needed today, especially when the lower volumes result in lending fraud and money launderings, and you're going to get some lessons from up front. Bob is just one interesting guy. He's a friend of Kittle, so you got to give Kittle a bad time. He's listening to me harass him a little bit on this. Great guy. It was a good interview. So pay attention Wednesday as we release that interview. Good information. You don't have an AML program and you got an anti-money laundering program. If you're not looking at what you're doing from someone following these issues, make sure someone in compliance is listening to that. In fact, the CEO suite should be listening to that interview. Also, let's get started this week with Adam DeSantis and the MBA Mortgage Minute. Adam, appreciate you recording these and send them in. What do you have for us today?
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, FHFA announced a new proposed product from Freddie Mac that would permit the GSE to begin purchasing certain single-family, closed-end, second mortgages on properties for which it holds the first mortgage. In a closed-end second mortgage loan, the borrower's funds are fully dispersed when the loan closes, the borrower repays over a set time schedule with a fixed rate, and the mortgage is recorded in a junior lien position in the land records. This proposal is intended to provide borrowers a lower-cost alternative to a cash-out refinance in which higher interest rates environments are present, like they are now. Freddie Mac states that the purchase parameters would aim to minimize their credit risk while balancing potential cost savings to existing homeowners. MBA appreciates the use of a comment period based on FHFA's new activities rule, and we will solicit feedback from members to formulate our response within 30 days after publication in the Federal Register. We believe it will be essential to evaluate what market this new product serves and to determine additional details such as the loan level pricing adjustments that would be applied to this product. Following that 30-day comment period, FHFA will have 30 days to make a final decision on product approval. We will remain engaged with FHFA and Freddie Mac during this process. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, good job. Adam DeSantis, thanks so much. We'll talk a little bit about that in just a minute here. Well, let's go into it right now. I'd love to get some feedback on this particular product, Alice. And I know you may be talking a little bit about this in your segment. If you will be talking about it in your segment. Maybe we'll wait until then. Let's wait till then until we'll talk about it then, because I think it's an important discussion. Let's get over to Les Parker with this week's TM Spotlight and his macro view of the markets, along with a music parody. I didn't get to listen to this advance, so I'm going to be interested as anyone. Les, what do you have for us?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Power Seller, making hedging easy.
Come on, Jay Powell, let's do the twist. Come on, Yellen, let's do the twist.
Data continue to confound the Fed and Treasury. Easy money and free spending led to the pain of persistent inflation. Now, tight money constrains growth and hastens deficits. So, rates go round and round. The key resistance to the 10-year yield remains at 471 and 501. Alternatively, the supports are 449 and 418. The bulls need to close below 449 to gain momentum. But for bearish momentum to rise, 471 needs to fall.
Come on, rattle race, and do the twist.
These cues are mine. Get the twist at tmspotlight.com.
Oh, yeah. Good job, Les Parker. Appreciate you so much. The music parody, what can you say with that? We'll get into that in just a minute, but be sure to sign up for Les Parker's TM Spotlight newsletter. You can get the paid version for free. He doesn't sing in it, but you do get a music parody he talks about. But it's really good, and we're going to get into that in the discussion after Matt Graham. We get into that. So sign up for the TM Spotlight by going to tmspotlight.com. Put in the word power for Power Seller, and you'll get the paid version for free. It's worth it. A lot of good reading, a lot of great content in there. And Les's commentary has been so spot on, as Alice has said. I write down what Les says, and more times than not, it is right. So we'll get into that in just a minute. Matt Graham is here with his update. Matt is CEO of MBSLive.net. He has this market update, and then we're going to get into a good discussion about all that we've been listening about. So, Matt, what do you have for us?
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live Market Update. Bonds finally enjoyed a week where they were able to level off after recent weakness, although some of the recent weakness crept into the beginning of last week, specifically on Monday and Tuesday. And the culprits there included economic data to a large extent, with retail sales on Monday coming out much stronger than expected, something we touched on briefly last week. And that weakness continued into Tuesday, and it was exacerbated to some extent with a speech from Fed Chair Powell in which he notably shifted tone. Perhaps it's notable to you. It's not notable to everybody, because some people would say it is just data dependent, and Powell logically acknowledged a recent shift in the data by saying it's conceivable the Fed might not even cut at all in 2024. If you look at the Fed's dot plot for March, they still saw 3 rate cuts by a very slim margin. And when we get the updated dot plot in June, if the data hasn't changed course by then, we can expect far fewer rate cuts priced in, perhaps none. Depends on how other Fed members feel. In any event, it was a shift in tone, and Fed's Williams had an opportunity to sort of walk back his previous dovish comment regarding inflation not being a surprise to the Fed, or inflation setbacks not being a surprise to the Fed. That was after the most recent CPI report. And then a few days later, he did have an opportunity to walk those back and said, if data called for higher rates, then the Fed would hike. Pretty simple stuff, pretty data dependent. But after getting that weakness out of the way earlier in the week, bonds calmed down on Wednesday. It was likely a bout of short covering, perhaps value buying. It wasn't tied to any big ticket, really obvious, overt market mover. And we did caution that it was probably just technical in nature, or short covering, or value buying. And true to form, bonds leveled off and didn't make any additional gains on Thursday. That was partly a factor of economic data, with Philly Fed coming out much stronger than expected, highest since 2022. And no real impact from jobless claims, but it was enough to get things to level off. Same story on Friday, no data, no major market movement, a very flat end to the week. The most important part about all of last week's volatility is that starting on Wednesday, 3 consecutive days had lower high yields than the previous day. And that's the first time that has happened in over a month. And at the very least, the first time it's happened, or I should say, not at the very least, but more importantly, the first time it's happened since this most recent uptick in rates began at the beginning of April. Looking ahead to this week, one might consider that PCE prices on Friday is a very important economic report, because that's what the Fed refers to as its preferred gauge of inflation. But what we've seen over the past few years is PCE just doesn't have the same market moving impact as CPI. First off, because CPI and PCE correlate quite well, the market gets its reaction out of the way with CPI, and PCE is easier to sort of hone in on from an economic forecasting standpoint once other economic data has come out, CPI being one of those reports, also PPI feeding into that as well. So that's the week's biggest economic report, but probably not a huge market mover unless it does something to really surprise forecasters in a way that couldn't be ascertained or weeded out of the existing data. That means all eyes are really on the following week, where we'll get the next Fed announcement, possibly an announcement of QT tapering, which we'll talk more about next Monday, and a bigger round of economic data culminating in Friday's jobs report. That's going to do it for this week. Back to you.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it very much. Be sure to check out Matt Graham's amazing website, mbslive.net. You can sign up for and get a trial period without the need of a credit card by using the code LOL in the sign-up area. Be sure to do so. But you do want to sign up for this. It's so affordable. One of my clients said, Dave, I didn't realize how affordable this is. This is just for the amount of information you get. You can't live without it. If you're in the business and you're a professional, I don't care what side, whether you're originator or what part of the market you're in, it's just such a valuable service. So sign up. mbslive.net. Let's get over to start off with Bill Corbett. Always love your comments about Les's comment and comments, as well as Matt and the market direction overall. Bill, what you have? Thoughts?
So I appreciated, you know, Matt's view of last week was okay because it wasn't bad.
When okay means it isn't bad. Yeah, that's,
yeah.
What does that say about the overall tone of the market overall?
Now, but it actually, it does say a lot about the tone of the market in that, you know, when, especially when you had the large sell-offs, right? What I always look at when you see a big sell-off, how much of a retracement of that do you see? And there are a lot of very technical ways to analyze it, but I don't have that many brain cells. So I just, what does the picture look like?
Yeah.
And when you see rates run up fast and there's not a meaningful pullback, you know, that to me says you're really in a new range for a while. And the market has seemed as said. The market felt it needed to be in a new range waiting for the data. And that's what we've settled into. And I know, and I've said this before, right? There's, when people were talking about cuts in June, right? June's a long way off from March and now April. There's a ton of data. So stop trying to front run everything. And now that's being pushed back even further. The data is the data. And there's a lot that's going to happen. So just our common theme, put that out of your mind, right? The rates yep. are what they are. And go figure out how to do business.
And that is a great statement. It's one that both Alice and Kittle has been making for a while here. Mr. Kittle, opine in on this. And then Alice and Mark. Thoughts on market and the report we heard?
Yeah, I'll just take it all the way down to the grassroots. As I'm exiting church yesterday after the sermon, a man in his mid-40s comes up, a friend at church, and he goes, man, rates are all the way back up in the mid-7s. Yes, they are. And he and his wife are buying a house, and they're locked in. And he goes, it all came down to the fact that they themselves internally are restructuring in order to buy this house. And I brought up the fact to him that at the higher interest rates, his home's going to appreciate quicker. He'll build equity that way. And he has a higher interest deduction at a higher interest rate. And he can always refinance when rates, if and when they come back down. And but you can't just bet on that either. To Bill's point, go do loans.
And go do loans, yeah.
I just wonder how many loan officers or companies market all this data. And if we overmarket and shoot ourselves in the foot again, because we talk about how high interest rates are all the time, and they are what they are. And here's the Fed chairman making this statement. So let's just say we're in this range, up or down 50 to 75 basis points for the next 18 months. If that's where we are until they get inflation under control, then are you going to close shop or are you going to continue to tough it out? Last thing I'll say is the industry cannot continue to produce loans at a $2,000 loss.
No,
it doesn't work after 7 quarters. So there's only so much cutting you can do. At some point in the conversation today, we're going to get into the fact that we've had the HUD secretary, now the Ginnie Mae president, resign within about 3 weeks of each other. We've had both GSEs change leadership over the last year or so. And to me, that points directly to having zero housing policy in this administration for 3.5 years.
Yeah,
and it's a tough time. And there's a signal there someplace. But yeah. I'll let us decide what that is.
Yeah, you touched on Alana McCargo resigning Friday afternoon, midday or so. Maybe shouldn't come as a surprise, David. Secretary Marcia Fudge resigned last month, and she was done at the end of last month. And so now here follows one of her selections and one of the people that Marcia believed in, Secretary Fudge believed in. And so both of them are gone. It does speak to the housing policy issues, but that's almost like another discussion outside of rates. I want to stick on rates just a little bit. But
the spin is going to be, and maybe partially true, because I don't know for sure. The honest is, this is the end. Of course, they both haven't been there 4 years, but it's the end of the first term of this administration and uncertainty whether or not they're going to return. It happens, to be fair, in administrations, but it doesn't happen. They haven't been there that long for them to all of a sudden want to leave.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of opinions on were they effective and all of that. I just hung up talking the phone just before we went live with Taylor Stork on this issue. Wanted to get his point. He knew her and worked well with her, and he thought highly of her. He knew of her desire to make changes. But when someone who comes in with fresh energy to want to make change and make an improvement, and then they resign, that leaves you with questions as to what's going on. I think the biggest thing we need to make sure of is we have a healthy FHA program. We have a healthy Ginnie Mae program, that we have adequate funding for Ginnie Mae, because we realize what an important part of the fabric they are to the industry. And I do have a concern about that with this administration. I think, as Bob Brooksmith said it so well when we were together in LA at the Leader One conference, he said, I hear him say one thing on this side of the mouth, and then they go do the following things. It's very confusing. Is that the reason they didn't state why both Secretary Fudge and now President Alana stepped away? But it is what it is. We're dealing with it and going forward from there. Let's get over, Alice, I'd love to get your thoughts, and then you get over to Mark. Alice, get your thoughts on both. You can comment about the absence or the exit of these two leaders in our government on housing or market. Take it away.
I think I'll just reiterate what I've been saying, that the data's not there. People who think there's going to be a rate change, like I said, I am not an economist. It is just from gut of watching this business for 40 years that it just doesn't look like it's going to happen. And so to plan for it is a problem, to David's point, is you really just need to think of, if this is my market, and this is the range I'm going to be working in, then how do I manage within that? I just don't see LO comp being addressed. David, to your thought about how do we change expenses, something's got to give, because that would mean everybody has to address it. It only takes one player to go, no, I'm not going to change it. And then that's where all the LOs are going to want to work, right? Because they're all going to chase the comp. So I think that's our challenge in the LO comp discussion. So put that one aside, because it's an issue that's larger than one company. There are lots of opportunities out there, I think, to keep expenses under control. But as far as rates go, that's it. I don't have a comment about those specific people who've left the positions, Dave. I just think it's a leadership void, and we have to get somebody who knows mortgage banking, knows housing finance in those roles, and stop trying to go in other directions for who should be leading those positions.
My vote is we put Kittle back on the slate, but the response is, given this administration, no way in hell I'd be going in under this administration to work on that. And I think that's sentiment for many media leaders, which goes to November when we look at our election. What are we going to do? What's going to be happening here? So
you're going to be allowed to work, or you're going there to put it on your resume. And
yeah, very true. Mark, give me your thoughts.
I've been putting on a resume work, didn't it?
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
Work for them, didn't work for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give you my comments. I think the problem we have for a while is really the problem that makes up the bad side of the psychology of lending. Everybody does extremely well when rates are extremely low, or not everybody, but most people don't give a crap about costs then, because they're doing so much better. They don't mind the extra costs. And then when the rates go up, they start getting concerned about the costs. They start losing their overhead. They don't ever adjust their overhead correctly to deal with the lower volumes. And then they start losing money. And I can blame housing policy for part of it. I can. But I also blame the mortgage companies out there. I have learned the hard way over the years that if you don't adjust your operations for reduced volume, you're going to lose. If you grow it too fast or delete it too slowly, you're going to lose. That if you don't get people who are intelligent enough to work for you as LOs, that can go out, like David said earlier, and go out and talk to a customer like Jimmy the Cricket did in the wonderful world of Disney when I was growing up, you got to accent the positive. The positive is you're going to have a bigger interest write-off. The positive is you can always refile if the rates come down, not when, but if, because we know sometimes it can take longer than others. And look at them and really push the positive. People have to get in housing. So when you have those discussions, the loan officer say, Mr. Jones, you want to get in a house? People are going to get desperate to sell the house. So guess what? Nobody can afford the mortgage payments, et cetera. So you're probably going to get a better value on the house than you normally would in a situation where interest rates are 4%. And because people, there's not anybody to buy houses right now. That's a problem. And because people are knocked out with the interest rates qualifying. So I think there's some pluses there. And I don't think we as an industry have done a good job of advertising the pluses. And David mentioned most of them. I mentioned a few here. I think our loan officers need to do a better job at that. And notwithstanding what our wonderful leaders in the housing industry do for us every day, I just believe the psychology of lending has been there all along. And we wake up one morning and forget what we learned from the past. And we never put in place what we did before to save our fannies and keep our businesses going. And if you don't do that, you're going to suffer and you're going to fail. I.e., we have a lot of companies closing out there. And we've got a lot of other companies not making any money. And that's never going to change till people change their mindset and put a positive psychology of lending in place where they accent the positive and talk diligently with customers about what the pluses and minuses are and also deal with their own operations effectively in their own market areas, et cetera. And I just don't think we do a good job of that in the industry today. Honestly, most of our industry career, it's not been a good job, but there are some companies that have broken the code and do a good job, and people need to do more like they do, and then people will be a little more profitable, less cost dependent, and hopefully going to keep the opportunity going for people to have home ownership. I know that's a winded explanation, but that's how I feel.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting, there's two things I want to put out there for everyone, but I want to run to Alan real fast. Alan, any comment you want to add to this?
Just two really quick things. One is, David Kittle, what you mentioned about the cost of performing a mortgage loan and the losses right now. I think one is we've never had really a technical focus at the highest level. It may not be effective on policy. I do think that some of the organizations in our industry do need to start putting a larger focus on technology. We have MSMO, which has done an unbelievable job. And I've got a startup in healthcare, and there is no refined or even one single data source or data type. But I will say that I think leadership on mortgage technology will be really interesting. And Fannie Mae, I'm going to be talking about it in my segment, just released this week a survey about the lenders and what they think about how many service providers there are and how to bring the cost down and why they're spending so much money. So very timely. Yep, we'll talk about it in a little bit. But I completely agree. We got to figure out a way to lower the cost and be more profitable so we can offer lower rates and better service, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's a great point. I can't wait for your segment. Way to tease it up. Keep us listening all the way to the end. There's a thing called the Stockdale syndrome. We've talked about that in the past, where if you're waiting for interest rates to drop, if you're waiting for an event to happen, we have a tendency to bring about a negative result. Stockdale, he was locked in the prison in Hanoi Hilton, and those that did not survive their experience there were those that set a date. We'll be out by this time. This will be out by that time. If you set a date as to when rates are going to be at a lower level where you can do something, that's the Stockdale syndrome, and you're possibly going to get caught in something that's going to be terminal to your career, at least the way you're running a business. That's number one. Number two, I want to encourage everyone to go out and Google the article that appeared in the Wall Street Journal. Very interesting. Three families that featured about they're not waiting for rates to drop to downsize their home. It's people that have owned their home for a good number of years. They use three families in three parts of the country. Really good article. I'll try to get that looked up. And I'll have Ben put it in the show notes. So if you want to come back and check our show notes, I'll have that article there. Very interesting article about three families who said, we don't think the feds are going to drop. Even if they are, we don't know when. We've got to move. We're selling our home. We're doing this. I think we're going to start seeing more of that. And the housing inventory that's been locked up with being the lower interest rate period, I think that could be shifting, guys. Go read that article. I found it very encouraging. And anyone who wants to look it up and make comment about, that'd be great.
Dave, I think it plays off of that, but everybody talks about the lock-in effect and the low rates that folks have. And I think what a lot of the analysis misses is there's a time decay, right? Where if you've had the 3% loan and it's a year later, your box of things that you're going to do is pretty small. But as time goes on, life takes over. And to the point of that article, eventually things start to accelerate. Either they have to happen or people, the change they want to make starts to outweigh the pure financial ramifications. And I think when you look at the data, that doesn't ever come through. So it's another example in my mind of be careful and just relying on the data.
Yeah, the perspective in there. I found that article really interesting. And they all quoted in there, we hated to give up our 2.75% mortgage. We hated giving that up. But, and that's that but that you just were talking about, Bill, life events are happening where life's got to move on. So very interesting. I take that as an encouraging sign. Hey, folks, I want to interrupt this podcast real quickly for a Byte customer satisfaction report.
It's easy. Our developer can jump in, throw in a custom field, write whatever rules or macros might be associated to it, make it visible to whomever, and it's done in a matter of minutes. And so I think that flexibility, it's great.
Let's get over to Alice Alvey with a report on the legislative update. Alice is, again, Vice President of Partner Education and Training. Stress the word partner. That's Bill Cosgrove's name, what he calls all his employees. They're partners, not employees. I love that. And Alice is here with a legislative update. Alice, what you have for us today? You're using that new fancy microphone, your Yeti mic, so we get to hear you with even more clarity again. It's good.
Yes, thank you. I hope it works. Yeah, my report today is going to be an extension of what Adam was talking about from the MBA, which is the FHFA proposal that is published now. And so we have until May 22nd to comment. And because it's Freddie Mac proposing to offer second mortgages, honestly, this is a great opportunity for lenders. If you think about it, the idea that I could originate a second mortgage, definitely closed end, and then be able to sell it on the secondary market. So there are a lot of unanswered questions. I think Adam referenced one of them. Certainly, we don't know what the rates are going to be. In the proposal, Freddie used a bank rate average for HELOCs, and they give an example of here's how much it would cost a customer who went out and got a home equity loan or did a cash out refinance, I should say, and what would happen to their payment versus if they got a second mortgage alongside a 7.5% interest rate first. And they quoted that second mortgage at 9.5%. And it was still, of course, saving the customer over $100,000 over the life of the loan. So think about that, offering a 20-year fixed rate second mortgage for customers. It does have to be a Freddie Mac only first. So yeah, that's the issue. Yeah. And the second, you can't refi that first and keep the second. You're always going to have to start over again. That second would have to get paid off if you're going to walk through a refinance transaction in the future. So nothing crazy about this as far as the terms that they're considering rolling out. So I think the proposal as it stands, allowing an 80 LTV, so credit unions, you're still safe if you want to go do those 90 LTVs. Freddie's not going to compete with you there. And not to exceed a 65 LTV for manufactured homes because of the additional risk that is seen there. So I think the product terms are great. So for those of you who don't want a lot of homework, you just go, yes, let's get it. You can go to the federalregister.gov. You can actually just Google Freddie Mac second mortgages proposal, and it should come up in one of your early hits. For me, it's right up at the top. And once you get to that page, it's super easy to post a comment, and you can just simply say, I agree with the proposal as it's written. That does have value so that we know we can try and get this moving. Now, some of the predictions on the when for this. So if you look at that, they have 30 days to get the comments. So we have till May 22nd. Then, of course, they're obligated to read all the comments. And as Adam said, they've got to respond then shortly after that. So this could be during this summer, later this summer, that we actually have this product available. I'd love to hear David. And David, if you guys have heard anything on this. And of course, there isn't anything out published yet on LLPAs, but would love to open it up for discussion and see what you guys have heard in the market.
Gettle, you heard anything on this at all? Nothing? You're shaking your head. I did. And what's really interesting, I heard quite a bit of comment on it as soon as this got launched because people said, I hope you talk about this on your podcast. It's going to be a higher rate, number one, and it's going to require borrower education. Versus called me and they said, you're not going to believe this. We're working with a client right now. They ran into some financial difficulties and they started making their payment. They decided to make the lower mortgage payment, which was their second mortgage, and they defaulted on their first mortgage. And they asked, why did you do that? It was the lower payments, the one we could afford. we've got to educate consumers what the heck that means.
There is not a component in the way the rules written for requiring any home buyer education. Yeah. Wait, are you saying someone wanted us to recommend adding that?
They thought that if we're going to be releasing, if Freddie is going to get into doing this, they need to at least explain the importance of
making
sure.
Home buyer ed? Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not a fan. They won't watch it anyway. It'll be 30 seconds. They'll be multitasking over here. That's just not, doesn't have the impact people hope.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree. Here's the comment I will put in quickly to what Alice is talking about. Who's going to develop the education? Who's going to do it? And who's going to monitor it?
Yeah.
Home buyer education before any program has never worked. It's never been. In. Yeah. And it has little to no impact on it whatsoever.
Yeah.
On paying the mortgage.
Yeah. Bill, was that a call on Friday that we had that this came up? I can't
remember. Yeah, it was. Yeah, the comment didn't come from me, but we were on a call together when that came up. Yeah, one of the things with this that I think just adds a lot of noise is when you start getting into it has to be a Freddie first, that starts really swirling from the customer perspective. How do you go out and really market something like that? I mean, if you are and have been for a while 100% Freddie shop, that's great. You've got something to do. But if you've been selling to both Fannie and Freddie, how do you go to, well, you're my favorite customers. You can do this, but oh, this group, you can't do this. That always gets squirrely.
Yeah, the reason I think the education part of it comes to this is that what are the unintended consequences if you offer to one, you don't offer to someone else? Do you start tripping over some fair lending issues unwittingly because of that? So it's all these things that are out there. One person said it's primarily because they just need volume. Their volume's off and they're trying to figure out a way of getting volume up as well.
The other thing that I'm surprised that it's gotten this far is with all of their focus on mission critical business and the pushback on second homes and cash out refis, I'm not seeing how this checks those boxes.
It'll be interesting. Alice, let you finish up this segment on this talk. Your thoughts? Or Mark, do you want to jump in on it? Any thoughts you have, Mark?
I do have one quick comment on it. I think a couple of comments have been made about this program. And as we talked about it, it comes to home from other programs that I think about in the past. Everybody has a good idea, and we put programs out there. I think about the 203K, a couple other FHA programs that got put out there without any really parameters on laying them out or any borrower education or anything. And those things were massive failures for the lenders because they didn't understand them, massive failures to the borrowers, and they've hung around by the hardest. We don't need that. We don't need programs to just hang around. We need programs to be proactive and help our borrowers and help us as lenders. So if we're not going to spend the right time and effort putting the education together for the borrowers and the education better for the lenders, let's not even do a program, because we got better things to do than to waste our time on that. And that's the biggest concern I have out there, is we continue to do that to ourselves over and over again. And all of us on this phone could probably make a list of 50 to 60 products during our career that came up from different lenders or from different agencies that went away. Yeah. And no thought was put into them and no education was put in them. And that's a recipe for failure, my opinion only.
And we got some HUD programs we need to bring back and focus on.
That's right.
245 and some of the programs that they have there, the home improvement. There's some good programs that we need to go back and focus on. So I'm not a naysayer on it. I understand what's driving it. And if it gets, we'll see where it goes and get some legs. But Alice, thanks for bringing it up and reporting on it. Really appreciate it.
And I think maybe Bill hit on the item that we have to make sure we do comment on is the comment should be, yes, I like this proposal, but it has to be Fannie Mae too. Maybe we start there in our responses. Yeah. It's not just Freddie Mac, because we want to make sure we can offer it to all our consumers, and the consumer's not in control of how their loan got sold. So I think that's a great point, Bill. And Mark, I don't disagree with you at all on the education. I'm a fan, obviously, that's my life, but we'll make sure we do that at Union Home. I'd rather not have it enforced by the regulation where the consumer has to go out and just take something that isn't going to be what we would call world-class to make sure they understand what's available to them. And I do think there's a lot of value in servicing education too, that more lenders are grabbing on to for consumers once they become customers. So
good.
Back to you, Dave. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Alice. Alan Pollock is here with this week's tech update, and we appreciate that. Alan, what do you have for us?
Great to be here.
A little earlier. Pretty interesting.
I know. Did my best. So first, the jokes haven't been rolling in so easily over the last couple months, so I've
I found this, which was interesting just before we get into such serious conversation about technology. So it was a Gen Zer, and they were on social media and talking about how bad it is in the dating world. And they met this guy and he goes, "I travel for work." And she was all excited. And then she was really upset when she found what he meant is he's a DoorDash driver.
I travel for work. I'm
a DoorDash. She thought she was going to go to all these exotic places and go to these conferences. And he travels, but he's a DoorDash driver.
Yeah.
So anyways, hopefully a couple of you are laughing at that. Right, anyways, I will bring up TikTok. It's all over the news.
Yeah,
and there's two interesting components of TikTok. One is there are a number of loan consultants, loan advisors on there, folks that are not explicitly selling loans, but they're telling borrowers, work with them, talk to them. They'll help you understand the loan. And they're explaining different ways to get your loan structured. Anyways, TikTok, we talked about Veed and a couple other of those services where you can create an avatar. There's, if you pay for creatively.ai, there's over 350 live speaking avatars that look exactly like they should. Anyways, TikTok is now adding virtual influencer AI avatars to promote products in its TikTok shop. In other words, you can create a fake version of yourself or of somebody else, and you can script them to talk and speak and do anything you'd like. Wow. So if you do have a brand, you do sell on TikTok, maybe you create candles on the side when you're not selling loans, check it out. But I thought that was interesting. And then lastly, on the TikTok, everyone knows that the bill that was just passed, our new spending bill, where a lot of money is going to be shipped off overseas. Anyways, the House did approve on Saturday that they will ban TikTok from U.S. app stores until it finds a new owner. TikTok has about 9 months to find a new owner. A lot of people are saying it's against U.S. civil rights, all these other things. Who knows what's going to happen, but the wheels are in motion over there. So if you haven't stayed in tune with that, please do. And let's get into the mortgage industry, David. First, I want to mention that Maxwell, and I know that we've talked to them quite a few times in the past, Maxwell has just released their 2023 mortgage lending report. I may have mentioned it last week.
It's a
free download. Yeah, please go to their site and download it. Such good content, and a lot of smart folks work at Maxwell. So go check that out. And then, David, I teed up this conversation. Mr. Kittle was just a moment ago talking about the cost of originating a loan. And you know, we've been following this for years. Fannie Mae has continued to monitor this and look at where are the costs and how do you reduce costs. We know with rising rates, there's been a lot of cuts as far as staff. Underwriters, you know, remember when they were getting $25,000 bonuses or double weekend pay to underwrite files? And a lot of that has slid to the wayside, and a lot of those folks are looking for work. So three titles. The first one is Fannie Mae's actual article. It's called Mortgage Lenders View TSPs, which is a technical service provider for anyone that doesn't know. The mortgage lenders view TSPs as an indispensable but expensive partner. And then National Mortgage News took their article and said, hey, mortgage execs want more choices, lower costs from tech vendors. It's a powerful statement, by the way. I'm going to say that one again. Mortgage execs want more choices and lower costs from tech vendors. And what NMN focused on in their article is the fact that there's not enough competition. We're going to talk about that. And then finally, MPA, they said mortgage lenders are frustrated as costs of must-have techs continue to climb. So I only looked at those three. The Fannie Mae article has been republished a number of times, and you can see everyone takes a different take on it, but they're trying to hit home with the fact that there's over 15 vendors on average, if not over 20 vendors, and it's very expensive. Not everyone integrates well. Here's what the survey said. They polled nearly 200 senior mortgage executives to gauge these views, and it revealed that lenders are increasingly worried about the rising costs associated with these services, and they're calling them vital services. Lenders now consider technology for loan origination systems, so your LOS and your point of sale, as the number two must-haves, which that's not a surprise, right?
No.
However, as we continue to go down through the article and some of the information from Fannie, I'm going to tell you what Fannie Mae says. Perceived TSP, okay, again, that's technical service provider, perceived technical service provider market competitiveness and value. And there's two functional areas, too many providers in the market or too few providers in the market. When they talk about too many, they're saying that there are too many AMC and appraisal tech platforms. Too many people are in that market. Too many people are competing and they're confused. And there's too many point of sales. However, there's not enough borrower data verification. They're talking VOI, VOE, VOA, and there's not enough loan origination systems. So quite interesting. And I think the fire that's fueling the two not enough LOS systems is because the cost of the ones that we have is high. Usually comes with a five-year contract, comes with vendors that sometimes may not be your vendor because that's the one they're providing or pushing, et cetera, et cetera. Not always, but then Fannie said, which is interesting, delivering exceeding or expected value. They're saying that the LOS and point of sales are delivering exceeding or expecting value, which is fantastic. That's your core system, your platform, but less than value expected. Fannie Mae saying, again, borrower data validation, VOE, VOI, VOA, and borrower credit reporting. And then they follow up with this chart, David, which is really interesting. It talks about which ones are critical and it breaks it into different percentages. The chart you want to see, so just go Google that Fannie Mae report that we just mentioned. But at the lowest side, you ready? You're not going to be surprised. Lenders are least focused on e-closing, e-note, and e-vault. It's not that they aren't focused. It's just in their list of priorities. They are the least priority they have of their, yep. What comes in second to last? You ready? Mortgage business analytics, BI data. And we can, I can guess 30 reasons why, but then it's AMCs. Now on the top side, it's LOS, it's point of sale, servicing technology. Mark Helm, I know that's ringing your ears. And then it gets into some other things. So at the end of the day, there are a lot of vendors. There's a lot of technology. You need consultants like David Licken, like some of the folks on this podcast, myself, to help you with the attention that is completely anonymous, not guided by which vendor is the best or had the best party at the conference, and to truly understand your vision, your path, and how you're going to win with these vendors and get that $2,000 loss per loan completely lowered to where you're making profit and you're providing better service to your customers. That ultimately is the win in the end. So anyways, David, good stuff. I know that the Housing Wire conference is going on right now and a lot of people are out there. So if you're there and listening to us later, I hope it was great. And we'll talk to you all next week.
Yeah, I know. I got a lot of people I know that are out there. It's sold out too. I'm really impressed that it did as well as it did on attendance. So kudos to our friends at Housing Wire. Great organization. I spoke at that event last year while I was here in Austin, and they're out in Scottsdale this year. Couldn't make it out there for that one, but good stuff. Good job. Thank you, everybody, for being here. That wraps up this week's weekly mortgage update. So grateful to have each one of you participating. Adam, Les, Matt, David, Alice, Alan, Bill, and Mark, appreciate you, as well as our sponsors, Byte Software, Finastra, Lender Homepage, Truve, Angel AI, MBA, Lenders One, TMC, the Mobility MMI, Modix, and Knowledge Coop. Check out all of these sponsors on our lending website. So grateful to have you here as a listener. Thanks so much for telling others about it. I am so blown away with how many people are listening to this podcast each and every day of the week. Thank you. Have a great week and look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week and thanks for listening.